we're due upstairs very shortly, but there's time for maybe just a couple of questions.
Does it have to be a question?
Or a comment.
My mother, at the age of about 20, left her community around Lloydminster to take a school south of Briarcrest, a rural school. I was put to in a house to board, the boarding room of German ancestry. And she welcomed this because she was keen on trying to learn the German language. It was an opportunity to cross enemy. So when war broke out, her hope said, well, you're going to have to learn to speak it anyway after the war. So she moved out right then.
Partly I would, but not completely. The you know, it was driving a lot of that right wing sort of fascist movements was the feeling that they had lost the war, but they had kind of been cheated out of a victory because they had been stabbed in the back, you know, by the Jews and the Bolsheviks. Allegedly, otherwise Germany would have won the war. And I think there is a parallel with the Klan in Saskatchewan, because these men who had, like this Reverend Sermon, who had fought in the war, and there was another Klan organizer named Snellgrove who had fought in the war, they felt that they had won the war, but the victory was being taken away from them because of all the Central and Eastern immigrants coming in under the railway agreements of 1925. So they felt that they were being kind of robbed of their victory in the same way that some of those German veterans felt that they had been robbed of their victory. So there is a bit of a parallel.
Mm-hmm. I was just wondering how strong the connections were maybe between the Klan and Saskatchewan with that in the Midwest, like Nebraska, you mentioned Indiana. Did some leaders like Reverend Sermon go to any of the qualifications, or what sort of connections are there between Saskatchewan and the Midwest?
Well, the main connection was with Indiana, and where the three organizers came from. And they came, as I said, in the end of 1926. And then what happened was in September of 1927, they took their money, they basically stole the money and they took off. And then but the people in Saskatchewan, then they didn't let the organization die. They had this big convention in Moose Jaw and they drew up a new constitution. And in that constitution, they cut all ties with the Klan in the United States and or with the Klan even in Central Canada. They were a totally autonomous Saskatchewan Klan. And they also, which meant they didn't have to pay any dues to head office. And they also said, well, we're not going to have uniforms. We're not going to have the robes anymore. We're, like, this is where the Klan sort of became indigenized in Saskatchewan, where they decided they were going to be, you know, decent British types and not engage in vigilantism, not engage in illegal activity. Like Gardner, Premier Gardner, who attacked the Klan, kept on attacking them as though they were the old Klan. He kept on saying, well, they're going to leave a trail of bloodshed all across Saskatchewan and so forth. But actually, they had sort of reinvented themselves. And that's why I'm, partly why I called the book Keeping Canada British, because this was a distinctively British version of the Klan, which was not as violent as what was going on in Indiana or in Alabama or places like that. It was a big theme in Moose Jaw because they talked about the... Prohibition was partially lifted, but there was a lot of illegal booze. And Moose Jaw was noted because of being on the railroad as a kind of a rowdy town with the red light district and also opium dens and illicit gambling. And this Pat Emmons, who was quite a charismatic character, he was also a part-time evangelist. When I went to the South Bend Directory and looked for his occupation, it was evangelist. He listed himself 1 year. So he apparently was giving a lot of sermons about social vice. You know, he talked about the paint. He said, Moose Jaw, that's a great town, but there are these painted ladies plying their vices. And so he really used that theme to build up his following. And he had a lot of Protestant ministers. For some reason, a lot of Baptists, but also United Church and some Presbyterian. No Catholics, of course, because it was very anti-Catholic. But this one fellow who was the minister, a prominent Baptist minister in Moose Jaw, he spoke at the big Klan rally in Moose Jaw, just outside of Moose Jaw, in June of 1927. He never gave up on Emmons, even when Emmons stole the money and looked like a real criminal. He still was loyal. He still saw some good in him. He thought his heart was in the right place. And he continued to speak from Klan platforms after Emmons was long gone and they brought in other organizers. But no, it is, especially in Moose Jaw, and I, for some reason, I couldn't find as much information. The Regina newspaper didn't cover it as much. And the other thing is that the reason that I know more about Moose Jaw is that Emmons was later charged with embezzlement, and so there was an account of his trial. So he described all the things he had done. So that's where I could get information about him. Oh, definitely. I think that this is happening all over the world. You know, as
all over the world,
as we globalize and people move around more. You know, they're having these debates in Britain, in the Netherlands, in France, in Germany, about. You know, foreigners coming in, and then what does it do to pre-existing ideas about national identity? And so I see a real parallel. You know, that's one of the issues that Quebecers have as they try to preserve their identity. That Charter of Values, the not-so-hidden agenda about that is the presence of Muslims wearing hijab and other religious apparel.
I'm sorry to break it off there, but we're 5 minutes late for our glass of wine. So I invite you to go upstairs and to carry on the conversation with Jim up there. But first, could we please thank him?